It is early September. The National Football League season is commencing. The baseball stretch run is in full bore. U.S. Open tennis wraps up this weekend. Autumn
could,
is upon us.
Could be great for Canada. Could be
kids
great
are back
Canada.
To school.
Yeah.
And the hockey and basketball seasons are perilously close to commencing, at least training camps are. And so it seemed appropriate that we should discuss a little hockey. So we're going to do that over the next couple of days. And today, the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas, will join us. First time on the podcast, I believe, John.
It is. And, you know, Kyle is not one to shy away from the pressure and not one to shy away from questions. So it's going to be interesting to see what he says about what his summer was like and what he's done with his team.
And what he will do with his team, if anything significant over the course of the next 6-8 months. Kyle Dubas, this time on the podcast, back after this. McCown and Shannon back with you and joining us this day, the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas, is with us. How you doing? How's your summer been?
It's been fast, Bob. Thank you. But we're back up and rolling. Start our development camp here in Toronto today with our young players and rookies, and off to Traverse City, Michigan next week for the rookie tournament hosted by Detroit, and less than 2 weeks away from training camp day one. So summer is effectively over, and we're on to the 21-22 season.
I guess the fair question is how agonizing has summer been?
There's just been so much, John. You know, we finished on May 31st, obviously hugely disappointing. And then you're right into your preparation for expansion. We had a number of staff hires to make here on the coaching side at all levels. So, you know, that took, it's been interesting how fast it's gone by, which I think given the way that the season ended is a good thing. Goes by fast and you get a chance to pick yourself up and get back at it again quickly and get rolling. But between the staff changes and expansion draft and free agency through July, I think it's gone by very, very quick. So the agony happened early and then you have to dust yourself off and get back at it.
Actually, you talked about staff changes. I think people forget that Dave Hakstol, the new Seattle coach, was on your staff the last couple of years, and you've hired Dean Chanuth. What will Hakstol's absence change in your planning?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a question that Sheldon could better answer. But having gone through that process with him, in replacing Hack on our staff. And then we had a Dean Chanuth to replace Hack. So Dean comes from Carolina where he did a really, really good job with their defense and with their penalty kill. And so our hope is that it is as seamless as possible. I think whenever you lose anybody from any enterprise, you're hoping you can replace them with someone as good or better. And Hack is obviously one of the best in hockey at what he was doing with us. And that's earned him the chance to get back into the lead chair with Seattle. So for us, it's trying to replace what he did here with our defense and the penalty kill with the best person we could find. And we're fortunate to be able to have Dean join us. And then we also added Spencer Carberry, who's the head coach and the AHL coach of the year last year in Hershey. So that he'll round out the staff in addition to Manny Malhotra who returned. So we're excited about where we're at and where we're going with the coaching staff. For me, most excited I've been about our coaching staff in my time here overall.
With Kyle Dubas, the evaluation process for you as a general manager is a 12-month deal. I understand that. It happens every day, every hour, really. You're constantly evaluating where you're at, how your players are performing, what things you may need or want, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you evaluate the success of the regular season versus the disappointment of the playoffs? And how much weight do you put on one versus the other?
Well, I think in the end, Bob, our goal is to win the Stanley Cup. So when we don't, that can only be achieved in the playoffs. And when we don't reach that in the playoffs, I think you have to be very realistic and objective and say that you fell short. One of the things that we've tried to focus on is that especially now going back into the Atlantic Division, if we do not have our focus set on having a great regular season and building up the habits that we're going to need to have playoff success in the regular season, we're going to be in difficult there. So we're going, I think everyone in our organization knows we're going into the season. We're going to be going head to head with Tampa. They've won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row. Boston is a perennial contender. Florida was one of the best teams in the league last season. They lost to Tampa in the playoffs in a great series. You've got Montreal in the division. They obviously beat us. They went to the Stanley Cup final. And then you have Ottawa that's been very open about what their aspirations are and the way that they finished last season, and the job that Pierre and DJ have done there is that they aspire to be a playoff contender as well. So you've got five teams, six teams in our division that are very open about what their aspirations are in terms of playoffs. And one of those teams for sure in our conference would miss and thus be greatly disappointed. So I think for us, that lets us really hone in on the fact that if we don't have a great regular season, we're not going to set ourselves up to get to the playoffs, and you can't just get there and flip a switch anyway. So it is greatly important. That said, I think we all know in our organization, players, coaches, management, everybody, that our team has to begin to have success in the playoffs, that the fans and media alike are not going to be overly satisfied by another, record-setting regular season. They want us to win the Stanley Cup. That requires winning four playoff rounds. And so in my role, you try to keep the focus on the day-to-day and what's required to have success in the long run, in terms of what you need to do day-to-day to get there, but also know that we need to set ourselves up to have success when we do get there and break through, which we haven't done yet.
Do you think that, and this is a difficult question to ask, but do you think this is your last chance to do that? I mean, you've been here 7 years now.
This is my eighth season, John. Yeah, and so going into the fourth as general manager, I never think about things that way, but I also don't shy away from the question either. And I think that it's certainly fair to ponder, and especially given the fact that we're going to return the same core group, which I have great belief in. If I didn't have belief in it, knowing the consequences to the team, we wouldn't have returned it. But I think it's certainly fair to say that if there aren't changes to our performance in the end, that there will be changes to the organization. And I think that comes with the territory of operating in a market like this and operating with a team that hasn't reached its potential in the playoffs thus far.
Is there anything out of the player exit interviews you can share that some people may not have heard about over the summertime?
Sure. I thought, John, that the players, especially after the season, so we lost, I think it was a Monday night, Tuesday, I think everyone just took the day, and then Wednesday we did our team photo and exit interviews. It was the most accountable that I've heard the players, just in terms of what their role was in us falling short in the playoffs. And it was also the most adamant that I'd heard them about the fact that they believe in themselves and they believe that this group will push through. And I know no one wants to hear that right now, and they don't want to hear us say anything. They want to see us go out and do it. And mm-hmm. and I understand that. I appreciate it. But to me, it was a good sign from our group that they were very, very open about what their responsibility was, and the fact that we had the lead in the series 3-1 and we weren't able to get that fourth win. And also the fact that they have a deep belief in this group being able to get there, and that they were going to back up those words with their actions over the summer and their training and how they came into the regular season. And, we're still, just under 2 weeks away, and we mostly have every player in our facility each day, which we've never had before. And I think that to me shows a great level of commitment and how serious they are about this upcoming season. And the fact that I think there are rightfully a lot of doubts about whether this team can do it, and they're going to get to proving themselves and our organization right, starting on October 13th.
As you look back on that playoff series with Montreal, what was it in your mind that caused your team to lose the last three games and ultimately lose the series? Was there a specific thing? Was it a confidence factor? What kind of happened in your mind?
I think games 5 and 6 were very similar, Bob. I think that in both of those games, Montreal came out, they got the lead, and then we stormed all the way back. And I thought we played really, really well. We pushed back in the games when it we could have went quietly into the night, tied both games. We're down 3 in game 5 and down 2 in game 6 on the road. Came back, tied the games, had chances in game 5 to win it in regulation, had copious number of chances in game 6 in overtime to win it as well. Puck didn't go in, and so that set us up for game 7. I thought game 7 for us was a totally different set of circumstances and a different mindset that ailed us. I thought in game 7 we were passive, and we were a little bit, we were on our heels. We went it into the middle of the ring in a championship do or die fight, and we really went in and allowed ourselves to feel out the opponent rather than go and assert ourselves and get on our toes and attack it and assert our style of play, which has sort of been the thing that I think that's ailed us. If you look back at all those similar games, if you go back to Columbus 2020, Boston in 18 and 19, and Washington even in game 6, 2017. So that to me was sort of the same type of thing that has hindered us in the past shining through there. And I think that is the one thing we need to change. When everything is on the line, are we going to be able to be at our best and assert ourselves? And I think the only way we can get through that is openly talk about it, not try to dance around the fact that it doesn't exist, and just lean into that criticism and reality and go right through it.
You know, you talk about that, and game 7 was it, the guys appeared to be afraid to lose. Just afraid to lose. And but this is a team that over the last 2 or 3 years has been in this, as you talked about, in this same position. And how do you get over the fact of being afraid to lose? Some of these guys aren't teenagers anymore. No. And they have to push through that.
I agree with you, John. I think we have to help them as an organization through it. And I think the way that we go through it is, you know, last year as we went to the playoffs, there was the narrative coming out of our room and organization was that we were different. This year was different. And I think when you tell everybody that, they're largely going to say, okay, we might believe you because the regular season has shown that so far, but you're really going to only know that when the pressure amps up and you have to go through that crucible of, you know, the biggest test. And in that moment, we reverted back to what the team has been before. And I think rather than dance around it and rather than look back on it, we have to look ahead and say, we're going to be tested in that way again. And this is what's happened in all these different times when we've done it. How are we going to change it? And I think the way that you start to change it when something's an issue is you confront it, you talk about it, you're open about it. You don't try to hide from something that's uncomfortable or something that has ailed your team in the past and limited its ability to reach its potential. You have to look right at it and go right at it. And that to me is, you know, what Sheldon, the coaching staff, and what all of our conversations at management with the players and the coaching staff with the players and the players amongst each other have been about this off season. So I know that everyone will be looking at the year and asking themselves, okay, they could have whatever regular season they want, but how are they going to respond in those moments? And that will be the ultimate test for our team. And I think what everybody here is looking forward to, but in order to get to that point, we have to have a great regular season first.
Well, one of the things that happens regularly, Kyle, and as you would attest, is a general manager evaluates the strengths and weaknesses of his club, especially at the end of the season. And one of the questions you would ask yourself is, well, where do we need help? Where can we be better? And with the cap being what it is, with the cost of your current roster being where it is, your flexibility, your ability to be flexible is very much limited. We understand that, which leaves you with the potential of a trade. Do you, and the question I'm sure you asked yourself at some point and within the organization, within your group, is there a move we can make that we don't really want to make, but will help our team? And almost inevitably, that move would be a core player. And how seriously did you contemplate that possibility?
I think we looked at everything, Bob, and we look at everything regardless. I know that there's a sort of a feeling that the core group is protected and we have a strong belief in them, but I think we would look at anything that would improve our team overall. Like regardless, I think the time for sentiment and different things like that have come and gone as the years have gone past where we haven't broken through to what many deem is our potential. Now, none of those opportunities we felt came along in the summer where it was going to tangibly improve our team, we could have, it would have made us different, but it wouldn't have necessarily made us better. And in the end, the decision was, from my end, that, you know, regard whether the team has reached its potential or not, or whether there's a huge amount of doubt around the team, I have an incredible amount of belief in the talent of the group, of the core group, and in who they are as people. And I also, what I've come to appreciate over my brief time in this league and studying others, is that if you really believe in something and it doesn't go necessarily the way you want right away, it's in those moments where you're staring down the barrel of a high amount of pressure and criticism and doubt that you really, your belief really truly gets tested. And that's how I feel about our group here. And I'm excited for them to pick themselves back up and get back at it in a few weeks and get into the season. And if things come up along the way that can improve our team, that's the job, and we'll be aggressive in trying to do that. But at this moment, none of those things have come across where I felt our team would be better. It might've satisfied the masses and the team might've looked different, but there was nothing that came across from the day that we ended the season against Montreal till today where I felt that we would have been absolutely better. And in the end, that's the position I'm in, is to try to find those opportunities, not just something that will make us different and potentially, you know, give me some room to breathe amongst the public or the media.
Are you tough enough?
I think we've, I think that's always a question of every team. I think the game is so different now. We went into the off season and, you know, the players that we acquired in free agency, especially John, I think bring those different elements. We, you know, we brought back Wayne Simmonds. We acquired Nick Ritchie. I think Nick is, you know, he's a good player and he can score. He can play up and down the lineup, but he's also, you know, he's also a very, very tough young man in the way that he plays. Michael Bunting, we he's a local player. We signed him from Arizona. You know, he's not got a long fight record or anything like that, and that really doesn't matter to us. But in terms of how he competes, where he scores, the areas that he's able to get to, that was what was really important to us. And then signing David Camp, you know, he's someone that we feel can take on a huge responsibility defensively up front. So in terms of the players that we signed, we certainly looked at their competitiveness or toughness or whatever you want to call it. And that was really, really important to us in terms of how they played, how hard they played, where they were able to have their success as players around the net defensively and such. And so, you know, we're happy with where we went there. We've obviously lost, you know, Zach Hyman, who is a very competitive player, but that's going to happen with, as Bob alluded to earlier, with where the cap is. Mm-hmm. You're going to have, if you want to be a competitive team and you want to contend, I think every contending team last year has lost a number of core players that were free agents. And I think you're going to see more and more of that, because you can't just extend the players and hope that you're going to figure out the cap stuff later. The cap isn't going to go anywhere. So you've got to, you're going to see, I think, see a lot more guys playing out their UFA seasons.
Is the criticism that you that is out there that you have designed a great regular season team, but not a great playoff team, is that fair?
I think it's fair for that, John, until we show that we can have success in the playoffs. I think there've been a number of teams over the years in hockey and other sports that have dealt with, that have been levied with that same accusation and claim, and you can fight it and you can try to refute it and you can get sensitive about it. You can say, you know, geez, it's, until we show we can win in the playoffs, it's right. And it's up to us to go out and prove that. It's not on anybody in the public to defend us or to shelter us from that claim. We have to go out and do it. And until we do, I think the criticism is fair. It's on us and only us to prove that we can. And until we do, I think it's certainly fair of anybody to ask any questions they have or to really ask whether we can. And so I have no issue with that at all.
John raised the issue, Kyle, of the physical presence on this team. And traditionally what we see happen, and what I think you've done, is you go out and try and get a couple of guys that are significantly physical. I guess the question I have is, can you take your core, who are not known to be physical players, and ask them to be more physical? And if you can achieve that, isn't that a much better solution than having one or two guys who go out there and try and bang somebody?
I think, as with anything, Bob, whatever is accomplished will be our core guys elevating themselves. And they're still so young, with the exception of John and Morgan. I think they're all still in their early 20s. Now, the sun is setting on the early portion of their 20s, but that's where they're at. And I think last year, to speak specifically about Austin, I thought he took big steps in how hard he played and how he competed all throughout the rink. And I thought that led him to be one of the more dominant players in the league. I thought in the playoffs, he continued with that same style of play. The puck just didn't go in for him. William Nylander in the playoffs, especially, I don't think these or anybody's core group are ever going to run anybody over. I mean, when I look at Tampa, I think that their core players are tough. I thought Montreal's core players, whether it was last year, Deneau and Gallagher, I think they're tough and they're physical, but it's not running people over. I think right. It's how hard do you work to protect the puck and keep it and get to the middle of the ice and score when it's hard to do that. And how hard do you work to get the puck back? And I think our guys, particularly Austin and William, showed huge signs of progress there last year, especially Austin. I think that's what propelled them into the conversation, right in behind McDavid when it came to the Hart Trophy and different things of that nature. Mitch Marner with our club has been on our penalty kill and a big part of our defensive units his whole time here. And so he's always had that element in my mind. And I think that's what makes him a special talent in addition to his scoring. So I think our guys just need to they look around the league and they see teams that have been faced with these same questions and core groups that have been faced with these same questions having success. And I think it's a great way for our people and our players to learn, Bob. But I think, as they're still young, they need to continue to push and develop. And in the end, they have to take those steps, but it's on us to push them to get there. So sure. We have a responsibility there and they have one. And I think that with the way last season ended, this year, more than any other year, I would expect to see massive evolution in everybody as we continue to push to try to win.
We're with Kyle Dubas, and we'll take a quick break and come back with more after this message. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, and the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas. You earlier alluded to, you mentioned Tavares. Of course, as Leaf fans well know, last time we saw him, he had that concussion issue. Give us some kind of an update. Do you expect everything to be fine with Tavares with relation to that injury this year?
I expect so, Bob, but it's the type of injury where unlike something purely physical, I don't think you truly know until someone gets back at it and fully immersed back into practice and exhibition games and such. So all seems to be good. John feels great. He's in the facility working and skating each day, and he looks great. And I know he's worked his butt off in the summer to continue to build on the way that he finished last year for us. And so I'm excited to see him up and rolling. And he's obviously a massive part of our team as our captain and as a center. And so certainly hopeful that our major concern is always with an injury of that nature is his health in the long run. And so it's protecting that, but we're now 3 months past it and all seems to be going smoothly.
The other guy you mentioned, Morgan Riley, I'm just going to say three names: Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, and Darnell Nurse. All of those guys got big new spanking contracts, and Morgan's going to be in that scenario at some point during this season, or we'll go to free agency next year. How are you with what the cap is? How are you going to manage the Morgan Riley situation?
I think more than ever, John, teams, I think you have to look internally to your situation. I don't necessarily think we can look at what Chicago, Columbus, and Edmonton did and say that, we have to follow the suit with them. And I think there have been a number of examples, whether it's, St. Louis and Parayko or the Islanders and Pelech, those are number one defensemen as well for their teams. And so, I think that especially in this era where the cap isn't going anywhere, you have to focus on your internal situation and what you have. And, we've got Jake Muzzin and TJ Brody signed for the next three seasons between 5 and 5.6. And we know what our limitations are going to be. And we like Morgan a lot, but we'll keep all the contents of that private between JP Barry and myself and get into the season.
I was gonna say you don't want to talk about Chicago, Edmonton, and Columbus, but you know darn well that JP's gonna be bringing up comparables. So that's the business you're in.
I think in the end, everyone can bring up comparables that favor them, and I think it's up to the two parties to find a fair solution where everyone's happy and roll on.
But so. there's no doubt that you want Morgan here long term, right?
There's no doubts that have popped into my mind yet at all, John. So we'll, you know, Morgan he's a great person and a great player for us. So we hope. But the only thing I would say caution about is that these things tend to many more of these situations tend to play out over the longer range rather than before the season or whenever as they have in the past, notwithstanding the extensions that you mentioned, but just with the cap situation and where it's at and the unknown of where it may go, maybe it marginally increases or not in a year. But Morgan has been an excellent person and player for us, and I don't see any circumstance where we wouldn't want to keep him.
Well, given that, I mean, you're talking about Morgan Riley and the cap situation. And there is a story out there, and I've been around long enough to know that you can dismiss more stories than you can raise a spocky an eyebrow
in this town, for sure.
Exactly. But there's some speculation about interest in PK Subban. Is it even possible, given the cap situation, that you'd have interest in Subban? Or could figure out a way to bring him in.
Bob, you're going to get him fined. You can't get Kyle fined like this. You can't. Come on now.
I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, and any. I mean, we get asked these all the time. You guys alluded to it off the top. I think this season is of massive importance, and any player that's a free agent a year or 2 years or 5 years down the road or whatever it may be is really not our focus whatsoever. So, I mean, our media relations team led by Steve Keogh, they give us all these rumors as we go into these types of interviews, knowing what might be asked. And I could definitively say that we have not thought a single thing about any player that's going to be a free agent a year from now.
Okay. Fair enough.
Is your goaltending better this year?
I think with goaltending, John, you hope so. I think, Jack Campbell, we're expecting him to come in, and over the course of a full season, now he's going to have a chance to carry the ball. We like Peter Mrazek a lot. So our goaltending this year saves us a bit on the cap, and we're hopeful that the two of these guys can work together and be a really great tandem in the league, and that over the course of the season, it sorts out who will start the first game of the playoffs and that they have a good battle through the year. So, and that will help us to become a playoff team and then assert our positioning in the playoffs. So I think so. I think, we last year, Fred was injured for a lot of the season. So, we had to rely on Jack a lot that he was injured. So Michael Hutchinson carried the ball and he did quite well. And then we had to bring in David Rittich. So we had a lot of people not only playing, but backing up. We had Joe Wall and Vinny Veveline, and just with the way that the year was and the number of injuries to our goaltending and the length of those injuries became a challenge. I'm sure hopeful that we're healthier this year. And if we're healthier in that, then we should be better.
You talk about Jack and you mentioned Mitch earlier. Yeah. You and I, we've known each other quite a long time. And one of the things I respect about you is your ability to how you make people around you mentally stronger. And I would tell you right now, the two guys that jump out at me that need help more than anybody, and this is my opinion, are Jack Campbell, who took the losses really hard last year, and Mitch, who understands the pressure of playing in his hometown. How do you manage that?
I think with, I've known Jack Campbell for 10 years. He was on our team in the Sioux 10 years ago. I've known him for 3-4 years before that. That's him. He's every loss, he's going to take heart. He's going to put it on himself. And, we've had a number of conversations over the last year, especially about, his demeanor, especially as he kind of started carrying the ball last year, John, about how that impacts the team. So if the starting goaltender is really down on himself, and especially when things aren't truly his fault, that can impact the team. So it's trying to get his mindset to transform from more of a, I'm going to take everything on myself and I'm going to blame everything on myself to, I know where I'm at. I know last year I was a starting goaltender. I'm attempting to assert myself again as that starting goaltender over a full 82 game season. I have to carry myself in a bit of a different way while still being the person who has got me to this point. So that's Jack. And I think Jack is such a wonderful person that, you know, if I was worried that it affected him day to day, the way he took the losses, that it was going to roll over into the next game, I'd have more concern, but I don't with him. Mitch, I think is went through at the end of last season, something that a lot of players go through as they evolve and they're star players. They produce big time in the regular season, and then people look to what they do in the playoffs. I think the thing with Mitch for us is that he just enjoys the process that he goes through every single day. He loves coming in. He's got great energy. He's been around here in the summer out on the ice. And he's, I don't think, going to change. It's the fact of when we get into a series, as I mentioned earlier, he can make an impact on the game in so many different ways. And I think people look at his salary and expect that he has to produce at a certain level. And my view of it is, I think that if he is coming in and he's being himself, he's going to have a huge impact defensively. He's going to have a huge impact on the penalty kill. And then naturally, his offensive skill set's going to take over. So I think with him, it's just a matter of knowing why we value him, and we value him for everything that who he is as a person and everything that he does and contributes to our team in all facets of the game. And I think the production and the offensive side comes naturally to him, and it will come naturally in the playoffs over time here as we go through it. And I really think that struggle and that criticism levied towards him and playing in his hometown and the impact that may have on he and his family, I think that will only help Mitch over time, especially as he deals with it more, learns to overcome it, and then thrives through it. I think it's up to us to help him thrive through it.
Well, I'm not here to wave the flag for Mitch Marner, but there's some statistical information that I think is significant. We acknowledge, and I think you would acknowledge, and I'm pretty sure Mitch would acknowledge, he didn't have a great playoffs, didn't do what he wanted to do in that series against Montreal. But here's a guy who's averaged 1.1 points per game during the regular season and 0.8 points per game in the playoffs. If you consider the defensive emphasis that exists in the postseason, those numbers are pretty reasonable. And I think the criticism of him was scapegoat-like. It was just a disappointed fan base. And I think you would agree, justifiably disappointed, looking for the guy to hang the loss on, like who was most responsible. And it was easy to look at Mitch and say, well, he didn't perform the way you hoped he did offensively, so therefore he gets the goat. Thoughts on that?
I think that the world, and this is not to derail this conversation into something deeper, but I just think the world is so different now than it was before March 2020, and that whether this is a political thing or the fact that everyone has endured a pandemic or the combination of the two, is that I think the world is just much more vitriolic than it was before. And I think that manifests itself most on social media. And then that spills over into the more public domain of media in terms of people needing to elevate their voices and have their voices heard and rise above the social media vitriol. And so for whatever reason last year, that as our series ended, I think, you know, Mitch, you know, he created a lot, and he had a number of not countless chances to score. It just didn't go in for him. And he ended up being the one that I think people went after the most, whether that's because he's local, whether that's because of his gregarious nature and the energy and youthful enthusiasm that he brings every day makes him an easier target. I don't know, but I do know what he's about. And I do know that he cares deeply about our team and helping us win and be successful. And I do know that over time, that criticism, I think, as we've all seen, and you guys much longer than I in sports, that the people who one year are highly critical and spew a lot of hatred towards somebody are just as likely to the next year be the biggest booster of that person if they have success. And I think especially in this, you know, era that we're going through, that is more true than ever. And I'm very excited to see Mitch capture that sentiment from the fan base with the way he'll play this season and in the playoffs this year.
You put a smile on my face because you're talking about the pressures and the polarization of the media and the polarization of society. And you're sitting in front of a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, the man who invented the bully pulpit. So you have obviously given this a little bit of thought.
That quote's been there for a long time. It's not a new addition. It's just a reminder every day. I think, especially working here, that if you come in every day and you're worried about what everyone outside the organization thinks or what they say, they're not inside the building going through it with you. And you're going to have your moments on this journey where you fall and you have to get yourself back up, and people are going to laugh at you and say that you're never going to make it, and that, you know, they're going to criticize you for your belief in what you're doing. And I think especially in those moments, John, where those criticisms are rightly levied, you have to stand up and keep marching forward. So that's really the key.
The league came out with its COVID rules last Thursday. It's a two-tiered system, vaccinated or unvaccinated. How much will it affect your team?
It'll have zero effect on our team. Between players and staff, will be 100% vaccinated here right now. So we're good to go. So no impact on us.
We wish you good luck in the upcoming season. It is interesting in this era how brief the off season is and how quickly another one comes upon you. And maybe that's a good thing this year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Don't dwell on the past, get on with the future. And we wish you good luck, and we thank you very much for joining us today and spending some time with us. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, guys. Great to see you. Thank you.
Kyle Dubas, we'll come back with more after this message.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
McCowan and Shannon back with you. And again, our thanks to Kyle Dubas, the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, what'd you make of the things that he said?
Well, I full disclosure, I've known Kyle a long time since he took the job in Sault Ste. Marie, and have always had a good rapport with him and been able to ask questions and get simple answers. And he's never shied away from any question ever. And so I think that in his nature, he's prepared to admit fault almost too much at times. But at the same time, knows that he's under a ton of pressure this year, and this might be he and his group their last chance to get this team to the promised land. And I think that was pretty evident to me.
A couple of things. We have two players in the semifinals of the United States Open for the first time ever, and when I say we, I mean Canadians. Fernandez or Oje Aliassim, which one would you say is more likely to make the final?
I'm not John McEnroe as a tennis expert, but I think Layla's got a better chance of getting through to the final. I think Medvedev is going to be very difficult. I think that there's a real belief in New York that his game is just a little bit better than Oje Aliassim's, and there's a better chance that Leila actually win the U.S. Open than Felix.
Well, what is interesting is that an unseeded player like Fernandez would be perceived at this point to have a better chance than a 12th seeded player. Mm-hmm. But I don't disagree with your assessment just based on the way the two of them have played. But I mean,
This is fantastic, though, Bob. This is all gravy now. This is gravy now. By the way, did you see Djokovic last night?
Watched part of it.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Once he got his mindset in place, what a display that was in the last.
Well, he did that in his last match, too. Yeah. Lost big time in the first set and then steamrolled.
Yeah. No, he is one impressive dude right now.
Toronto Blue Jays with yet another victory, John. It just keeps rolling along.
Well, and not only that, when you, with what Manoa did, and I mean, what Simber did, and then Romano to come in and do what he did, I mean, everything's just fallen into place. I mean, the criticism of the bullpen is evaporated because they have, but they're back, doing smaller stints. And they seem to be so much more effective. And I don't know if anybody can tell you why, other than confidence.
No, you can't. You can't. There's no science to this. This is all happenstance.
Yeah.
But, so much of sports, and certainly baseball, is about self-belief, self-confidence, motivation. What I did yesterday plays on what I do today. And these guys, this is a confident, not cocky, but a confident group.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how long this run can continue, whether it's in consecutive victories or just playing well for, the next 3 weeks, what they really want to do.
Yeah, and we've all talked all season long how well they can hit the ball, but the numbers in these guys, Teoscar's numbers and Simeon's numbers and Guerrero's numbers, Bichette's numbers. I mean, they're just spectacular. You compare them to other teams. I tried to compare them last night to what the Yankees are doing, and the numbers dwarf anything that the Yankees have, really. I mean, it's so impressive.
Well, what you need somebody to step up every night, and it's been a different character the last week or so, almost every night. Somebody different jumps up and takes the honors for a victory. The National Football League season begins tonight, actually. I don't know how well you follow the National Football League. A little bit?
Oh, no, I follow the NFL, sure. You know, Tom Brady is going to make his 300th start in the NFL tonight. 300!
Yeah, games. Well, when he hits 1,000, let me know. Because,
Bob, if there's one guy that might hit 1,000.
Well, that's the point.
I'm going to do an old man thing here. Do you remember when we were kids? I lived on the West Coast. We were Raider fans. I loved the Raiders. And their first quarterback when I was a kid was Daryl LaMonica. Their backup quarterback was a guy named George Blanda.
Yeah, George Blanda played till he was 45.
Yeah, but George Blanda looked 60. George Blanda looked old before old was a word. And then you think and look at Tom Brady, who's
45,
and you're going, well, Tom looks like a kid compared to George Blanda.
It's astounding, isn't it?
It is. And we used to revel in the fact, let's get Blanda in and we can talk about a 45-year-old maybe getting a couple of touches in a game.
Well, I can do better than that. I mean, not better than that, but you remember Lou Groza?
Oh, sure.
Lou Groza played till he was around 45, something like that. He was a kicker, for God's sake.
That's a kicker.
But that's my point. My point is, we thought it was remarkable that a guy like Lou Groza could continue to play in the NFL. Yeah. Well, he was just kicking the ball.
Yeah.
This is a quarterback. I mean, now, having said that, I think you would agree with me. The only position in the National Football League where a guy could play until 45 is quarterback.
Other
than kicker.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably. Oh, yeah. Probably right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Running back could never do it. Lineman could never do it.
And the rules.
Even a wide receiver probably couldn't do it.
And the rules they've put in place in the NFL to protect the quarterback has allowed for that.
Well,
it's fascinating to watch. And they're playing the Dallas Cowboys, who I think will fall flat on their face one more time. I really do.
No reason to believe they won't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You make Tampa Bay the favorite to come back and win. All 22 starters are back. I think it's the first time ever that that's happened.
Yeah, and on the other side, I think Dallas after being a disappointment last year and after the Prescott injury, I think they made 36 changes on their 53 man.
Well, that's
roster.
Dallas. They're not in the conversation even for the championship.
I don't know. Who's my favorite? I don't want to pick Tampa to be my favorite. I don't want to.
Well, they sure look like the best, the most likely champion.
Yeah.
Although I will tell you, and I feel like I have the right to say this because it has been decades. I mean.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Go, Bob, say it.
They got a chance.
He's talking about the Cleveland Browns, folks.
They got a chance. I wouldn't bet on them. I was thrilled with the way they played last season. That Pittsburgh playoff game was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But
without their head coach on the sideline.
They're pretty good. And they certainly look like a playoff team and maybe a lot more than that. Who knows? We'll watch and see. Hmm. You want to tell everybody who's coming tomorrow? Okay. John keeps things a secret, and I just follow along.
Bob, like information is power. Information is power.
Well, you have some information, and you're pretending to be powerful.
pretending is the key word.
Again, our thanks to Kyle Dubas. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye, everybody.